Donovan Bennett, Sportsnet host of Free Association, Sportsnet's Raptors and NBA podcast. Hey, how you doing, Donovan?
You didn't like the 1980s basketball that we saw last night, where the Raptors were 18 of 36 at the rim shooting? You didn't enjoy that spectacle of the sport?
Wasn't enough violence.
Thank you, Hugh. I appreciate it.
If you're going to have 80s basketball, let's have the throwdowns underneath the basket.
Yeah, we need a Toronto something that rhymes with malice in the palace. Is this where you're going with this? No, we don't need that. But you know what? As I said, a win's a win, and you're playing without Lowry, and you're playing without Valanciunas. So what can we learn from what we're seeing right now, Donovan?
It's funny because normally I would agree that a win is a win, but it's more of a trend in the way they're playing that I think it's more concerning. That okay, Orlando has some nice players, you're on the road and struggle to get a win, fine. But at home against Chicago to close out the year, I think the thing that you take away from this team is Kawhi Leonard is the best player, but clearly Kyle Lowry is the most valuable player because they haven't played well without him specifically offensively, and it seems like there are two different offenses. There's the offense with Kyle Lowry that is very pick and roll focused and gets the ball moving and passing it on the weak side for corner threes. And part of the reason that you're seeing less pick and roll is because Jonas Valanciunas is also injured. But there is also the Kawhi Leonard offense where it's okay, well, let's give the ball to Kawhi because he's supposed to be really good and let's all watch him. And he had zero assists last night. For someone who has such a high usage rate, that is an issue. And as good as he is, the ball tends to not move as much. It tends to stick when he's in the game. And I think that's the most troubling thing of how do you integrate the most talented offensive player on the team with the offensive unit that Nick Nurse has that had everyone so happy with the offense a year ago, but had the team flourish offensively last year. I think that's something that we're still seeing them kind of work through.
And Donovan, you talked about the absence of Kyle Lowry, and maybe nobody misses Kyle Lowry in this lineup more than Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby. Is it just the absence of Kyle feeding those guys, or is it something else? Are other teams figuring these guys out, or are they just not used to playing this many minutes, or is it a combination of all three?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see, you're right. I mean, Kyle is an intense defensive player, but you see him and his value on the offensive end when he's not around. They shot, under 41% last night. That's, five times in the last seven games that's happened. Guess what? He's been out for that span. And guys like Pascal, guys like OG, the reason why they miss him is because, when you get a stop, they'll get the ball from him as he loves to advance the ball on the break. And they're getting 2, 4, 6, 8 easy buckets a night just because they'll rim run and they're faster and bigger than the guys guarding him. And with DeLon and with Fred, they're less apt to do that because, they're afraid of the assist to turnover ratio that has been an issue for them as young point guards, and they'd rather just look to Nick Nurse and run whatever set he wants at the time. It's like anything, right? When you are the interim person, you just want to make your boss happy. So the offense is a little bit more half court when they're in it, where Kyle likes to push things and get easy baskets. So that's the biggest thing. The other thing that I think in terms of Pascal, and he's had a great time scoring the ball, is his assist numbers have come down. And again, last year we saw him facilitate a lot because he was playing in that second unit. He was kind of doing a Draymond Green impersonation from the top of the key as a point forward, if you will. Now he's playing more starters minutes. He's playing with Serge more. He's playing with Kawhi more. He's playing with Danny Green more. So the ball is in his hands less as a facilitator. And I think that's part of his value. And so managing when he should look for his own shot, when he should try and create for others, is something I think he's still managing when he's playing with better players and he's more apt to defer to some of those veteran guys that he's sharing the floor with.
Now, we've been talking for a while about how the East has probably surpassed the West as far as the amount of good teams at the top of the NBA food chain. Now, we expected when we looked at the standings that if the Raptors were going to have a couple of teams close behind them, it was going to be the Sixers and the Celtics, and they're 3.5 and 4.5 back. But the Bucks have passed them in the standings, and the Pacers stand between them and those other two teams. Is this a little bit of a shock?
Yeah, I mean, of all those teams, oddly enough, the Bucks scare me the most, just because they have a guy in Giannis who could go shot for shot with Kawhi on both ends. I still think we'll see the best of the Sixers in 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. They didn't really have a training camp to integrate Jimmy Butler, so they're still figuring that out, and they have, you know, got nothing from a first overall pick in Markelle Fultz. So whether or not he finds his shot and his health, or they trade him and use him as an asset, I don't think they're done. Remember last year, the Sixers were the most aggressive team on the buyout market, bringing in Bellinelli and Ilyasova to add some shooting. I think the Pacers will revert back to the mean, and they'll fall back to the pack a little bit. But it's crazy to think, when you look at, as we end the calendar year of 2018, the Raptors, 62-24 in that span, the best record of anyone in the NBA, East or West, in the calendar year. So even though they're not playing the best to end the year, it's important not to forget that fact. And I still think the Raptors, you know, are a team that could be in the buyout market as well to solidify things a little bit. So I'm not certain that even as hot as the Bucks have started, as solid as the Pacers has looked, and the amount of trade capital the Celtics still have, I'm not certain that if I'm giving Masai some truth serum, he's too worried about facing those three other teams in a 7-game series. I think, despite how bad they've looked in the last 2, 2.5 weeks, I still think that he's confident in this group going forward, because when rotations get tighter, and assuming Kyle is healthy by the end of the year, their ceiling is still higher than those three teams. If they're playing their best basketball, they're still by far the best team in the East. And their two performances against the Warriors, I think, is the best example of that.
So, Donovan, of those teams that we just mentioned, Milwaukee, Indiana, Philly, and Boston, I don't think we've seen the best of the Celtics yet either. You mentioned the 76ers. We might see the best of them in 4 or 5 weeks. I think the Celtics are going to come hard as well. Out of those teams, which is going to give the Raptors the biggest fits as we enter the second half of the season?
Yeah, it's a great question. When you look at the Sixers, there's probably going to be no other team, forget about in the East, in the league, that sends three people to the All-Star game. I don't think the Warriors is going to, the way Draymond Green has shot the ball and Klay Thompson has shot the ball. So they have the most high-end power, but they've really sacrificed a lot of depth. So let's eliminate them from the conversation. And the Bucks, they've been so good offensively. They're trading twos for threes, and Budenholzer has been a revelation. But we've seen with new coaches, and this may be the case with the Raptors a little bit, although Nick Nurse is new, but he's internal, that in that second half of the season, the last 30, 20 games after the All-Star break, teams start to figure out this is what they want to run. These are the sets they like coming out of timeouts, and it's a little bit harder to get wins later in the year. So, yeah, maybe call me crazy. Maybe it's because I'm valuing the uniform a little bit too much, but I think the Celtics, again, if we're looking at these teams at their peak, the Celtics would be the toughest team because they have high-end talent to match up with the Raptors and Kyrie and Hayward if he gets back to himself, and Horford, both, you know, valuable on the offensive and defensive end. We know they have a great coach, and they have depth. Their issue actually is that they have too much depth, and that role definition has been something that they've struggled with to start the year. But they'll be able to withstand some injuries. They'll be able to withstand some slumps. And we've seen in the last 2 years that they haven't had health in the playoffs, but they've actually played better than their regular season selves, even though they weren't at 100%. So yeah, of all of those teams, you know, when I look at the standings and see, okay, well, who may match up in a second round matchup? If the Raptors in one, who would be four that they could play? If they're two, who would be three? The team that I would fear the most would be the Celtics. And the other interesting thing to remember is, out of all those teams, if you're talking about, you know, potentially having to go in a building in a game six situation or a game four situation, get a crucial win, what's the toughest building, I think, to play in? I think it would be the Garden. I think Boston, the TD Garden, as it is now called, I think Boston would be the toughest one to get a road win in the playoffs.
Donovan Bennett, always a pleasure. Have a very happy new year. The new year should present us with some exciting postseason basketball, and maybe with a few more victories than we've gotten used to around here.
Yeah, that should be fun. Happy New Year to you guys. And a resolution, maybe, like, just placate Brady when he says something crazy. Like,
right.
Don't have to argue with him all the
it's
time.
It's easier said than done.
That's good. And I would be concerned if you're trying to give someone truth serum. That I don't know how that's going to happen, but be careful.
Oh, well, thanks, guys.